Welcome to the first episode of the FinPro podcast. My name is Serge Amuzu, and I'm the founder and CEO of FinPro. FinPro is predictive financials for startups. Startups, small businesses, and product managers in large enterprises use our technology to forecast financials. They can use industry data to forecast multiple scenarios and import actuals for intelligence projections. I'm really excited about our first episode because I have an amazing guest with me today who can tell more about himself than even I can. But just to give you an idea of his background, he's worked at companies like Adobe. He's also been at companies like Amazon. He's behind Alexa. He's also behind product like Google Assistant. And so I'm excited about this episode because we'll have a wealth of knowledge. Audience will really enjoy and take in some of the amazing gems that Akshay has to share with us. So without further ado, our first guest for this very first podcast, Akshay Goel. Akshay, thanks for joining me. And I'm really excited to have you on board here. You've had a breadth of experience in the product management arena at companies like Amazon, Google, and Adobe. And I want to start by letting you tell us about yourself, your background.
Sure, thanks a lot, Serge, and great to be here. So about myself, yes, I started out as a software developer with Adobe and had ton of fun there. I've worked on some very popular products that most people know about. So Adobe Reader, Adobe Photoshop, so contributed to the growth of those products. And then got my MBA from the Indian School of Business in India and transitioned to product management starting with Amazon. And I've been leading product management for about 7 years now, and recently started at Google. So I spent a few years at Amazon, and now I'm part of the Google Assistant team.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I think, working on a product like Amazon Alexa is fascinating. I mean, what can you tell us about your involvement in the product? What are some of the features that you've built? And I think our audience knows how Amazon Alexa is changing the world. But from your own perspective, how has your contribution affected the product and how it changes the world?
Sure, absolutely. I think as most folks know, and use as well, Alexa helps us do multiple tasks, ranging from setting alarms, playing music, controlling, your smart home, so ton of stuff just by the access of your voice. And my role particularly was in the ML and AI platform team. So this is the platform that powers these multiple features across different verticals and helps us get features that are developed by these different teams to users faster and with the higher quality, that users can rely on. So the platform essentially powers supervised ML models. So this is models that use training data for them to be, improving on precision and recall. And my team and I, helped in the development of this platform.
That's exciting. As a product manager, first of all, it's an organizational role, and you're tasked with creating the product strategy and leading the team in order to deliver the finished product. How's the process like at Amazon?
Yeah, Amazon has a very user-centric or customer-obsessed way of thinking about products. So, as you said, definitely product manager role tends to be extremely cross-functional. So a product manager works with multiple functions, including software development, design, marketing, PR, legal, a bunch of different functions. And typically the way it starts is a product manager, or in fact, this could be anyone thinking about a product, they start with articulating what is the user need we are trying to meet with this product, and what does the long-term vision look like. So internally, this is called a press release. And you know, it's meant to be in a way that, hey, if somebody was writing, let's say, you know, a newspaper article about this product tomorrow, what would that read like? So, you know, so as a product manager, you try to write it on your own, and then, you know, organize the team and different functions towards that vision of, you know, what you want to achieve.
Yeah, that's fascinating. This concept of press release, you know, is that unique to Google? Because it sounds fascinating to me that you can think of it as a press release, so that in a way, you're already ahead of the market of what you want your product to sound like to the consumer, or, you know, if it's enterprise, the enterprise, or whichever, you know, customer segment you're addressing. So this is a fascinating, you know, approach to me. Is it specific to Google?
Yeah, I came across it only at Amazon, but I think now I've read a few articles where multiple other startups are starting to take, you know, this approach as well. They're trying to, you know, assimilate that into their culture too. But yes, definitely something, you know, very ingrained into the Amazon culture around, you know, being able to clearly articulate the long-term vision, who are your users that you want to serve, and what are the key needs you want to target, and how will you do that? So very forward-looking way of, you know, aligning everybody to that vision.
Yeah, and thanks. You're right. It's Amazon. I have Google on my notes here, but yes, Amazon. Yeah, I mean, you know, Amazon is, you know, a massive organization, right? I mean, you have to, you know, think of different product segments to serve customers, and you know, you have experience at three of, you know, the biggest companies in the world. You know, and I'm sure that, you know, that experience transcends across your roles that you take on, right? And so, you know, how do you get stakeholder buy-in when you think about a new product at a company like Amazon, or now are your current role at Google?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And I think as a PM, it's a lot about both, you know, looking at it from multiple, you know, angles. So I would say, you know, three primary areas that a PM needs to look at, you know, like from a strategy point of view. Definitely one is from a user point of view, what is the value you're going to provide to the user? And can you make a case for that? Yes, this is a big problem for users. It's a widespread problem. And, you know, if we solve this problem, then we impact their lives in a meaningful way, right? So definitely that user empathy needs to be a part of the proposal. The second piece definitely is around from a company point of view. So companies have, you know, or in fact, different organizations have articulated missions and, you know, things that they stand for. So you need to make sure that your proposal and the idea, you know, aligns with that company or organization mission. Definitely, you know, there could be some great ideas that are, you know, impactful for users, but if they don't align well with, you know, the rest of the organization, the mission and where the organization wants to go, then it can be a hard sell, right? So that definitely helps. And I think the third piece is, you know, more from sustainability and, you know, from a financial, you know, feasibility kind of point of view, being data driven and being able to support your arguments with, you know, hey, this is the size of the problem, and you know, this is how this is beneficial for the company if we invest in this initiative. I think tying those three aspects together into a proposal helps, you know, get stakeholders aligned.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you know, what you know got you excited about becoming a product manager?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I was, even when I was a developer, I was always, you know, sort of thinking about, hey, what can I just build this quick prototype and, you know, show it to my manager or the PM and, you know, see if this works. I was developing iOS apps on the side, you know, just on my own. So I always sort of had that, you know, feeling of being closer to the user in terms of what needs are. And just, you know, even though I was terrible at design myself, but just quickly putting something together that, you know, that works, is more tangible, and, you know, I can show it to someone. So those were, I think, the seeds of maybe, you know, curiosity and being closer to the user needs, and felt that, you know, maybe a PM role does this full time. So seemed like an exciting career path.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, so your background, you're from India. And, you know, how did you, you know, manage to get into organizations such as Adobe, you know, then follow that up with Amazon and now Google?
Yeah. So yeah, it's definitely, I was born and brought up in New Delhi, India. So I did my undergrad there in computer science. And I think similar to, I think for most of the multinationals, the interview processes, et cetera, tend to be fairly similar across countries. So yes, you know, and a lot of the companies in India also visit campuses as part of the placement initiatives. So at both, you know, my undergrad school as well as my business school, companies, you know, have placement drives, and students, you know, sort of appear for them and take interviews. So in both cases, yes, you know, appeared for interviews with both Adobe and Amazon, and you know, was lucky to, you know, get through.
Yeah, and I mean, I would say it's, you know, it's unusual for sure, as in, you know, you have to have a certain type of drive, right? To, you know, want to be in product, want to innovate. And as I was doing my research, you know, before we hop on this podcast, you know, I was fascinated by, you know, the fact that, I mean, you know, you have an MBA. How does that contribute to your expertise now as a product manager?
That's a great question.
And would it be something that you recommend other PMs, right, who are looking to get into the field?
Yeah, I think first to talk about a little bit on, you know, the value of the MBA and, you know, its relevance to product management. So I think definitely, you know, based on, and MBAs also can be extremely varied based on, you know, what specialization you take and, you know, like your majors and minors, et cetera, right? So can be extremely varied based on what a student picks. But definitely, I think an MBA, you know, helped me personally to, A, you know, get a more diverse view of, you know, different functions that are relevant to serving users. So for example, coming from a software development background, I knew, you know, very little or nothing about market research, about product strategy, about, you know, organizational dynamics of working with other folks, etc. Right. So all of these, I think my MBA definitely helped me give visibility into, and also, you know, some extremely diverse peer learning, right? So in an engineering school, you know, everybody is an engineer and, you know, might have a very logical and somewhat similar way of approaching problems. But at a business school, you have people from, you know, accounting background, finance, marketing, engineering, different backgrounds. So it was fascinating to me that, you know, how my peer group approached a problem, and it would sort of, you know, give me a completely new way of looking at things.
Yeah.
So definitely, I think diversifying the view of, you know, approaching a problem is something that my MBA really helped with.
That's phenomenal. So, you know, Amazon Alexa is in millions of homes. And you may have talked about this a little bit early on or mentioned a little bit, you know, but how do you, you know, or what tools or, you know, do you use, right, to intake data that can help you fine tune Amazon Alexa, right? I mean, again, you know, it's in all of our homes, right? And so what pieces of data help you to continuously improve the product, right? So that when I go asking Amazon to play, you know, Machine Gun Kelly, or, you know, give me an example of an artist, you know, what tools do you use and help you, right, build such feature sets that help millions of users when they're talking to Alexa?
Right, right. So I think there are multiple levels at which, you know, sort of user research or user feedback happens, right? So one definitely is in the form of, you know, when we are thinking about new features or new capabilities that don't exist today, you know, there's a ton of, once there is an idea, there's a ton of research with users about whether this, you know, we try to validate and prove to some extent, whether, you know, this will be useful to users or not, like, you know, so, there are surveys, there are studies, there are, you know, focus groups. So we try to figure out, is this a valuable problem to solve for users? So that's sort of, you know, at the initial concept kind of stage. And then as we come up with some concepts to solve those problems, we continue to iterate with users. So let's say, you know, we'll come up with multiple design options, and we'll show them to users and say, hey, you know, can you try doing this for me? And the user will try it. Sometimes they'll succeed, sometimes they'll not. And, you know, so we try to figure out, you know, is this making sense to users or not? And try to pick the most, you know, user-friendly option out of those. So that's at the solution stage. And then I think once the feature is launched, there's a complete sort of, you know, cycle of getting user signals or feedback from different sources, right? So for example, you know, to take your example, let's say you asked Alexa to play some music, and, you know, just after asking that, you say, you know, hey, stop, or, you know, you turn it off, right? So that's a good signal for us to say, hey, maybe Alexa did not do what the user wanted to do, right? So we look at that kind of a signal. Similarly, you know, there are, you can provide, you know, feedback within the app to say, hey, you know, this did not work or that did not work. So combining these multiple signals together, there is a continuous improvement process to identify where are the biggest issues or failures happening, and then how can we fix them?
Yeah. Wow, that's great. That's great. Yeah. So, and, you know, as we talk about product management, I'm of the belief that, you know, I'm of the belief that every organization thrives based on the product that they put out in the market, right? You know, you know, whether you're a small business, you're providing a service, right? Or if you're a product company, your service is the product. And so, you know, you also mentioned this briefly early on, but how do you get buy-in from stakeholders, such as, you know, stakeholders. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I think as a PM, there are typically, you know, several stakeholders you need to align in order to, you know, achieve the vision that you wanna go towards, right? So there are engineering partners, design partners, leaders of the organization, you know, who would typically, you know, give feedback around, you know, the right long-term direction and, you know, whether, you know, how should this initiative be resourced compared to other items, right? So I think each stakeholders, my personal approach is, you know, individuals, you know, and leaders, they would come with their own way of looking at things. And, you know, it definitely is a great thing to sort of, you know, get a diverse set of views. But at the same time, it's also a PM's job to keep moving things forward, right? So it's their job to ship that product and put it in the hands of users. So a few things that I definitely try to do, you know, one is I try to lay out, you know, sort of some product principles or, you know, kind of decision-making techniques upfront as in the proposal, right? So there are always, you know, trade-offs to be made. Let's say, you know, you could say, hey, do we focus on growth versus engagement? Or, you know, hey, monetization comes later or sooner, right? So I do take a stab at putting in some product principles that, you know, that I want folks to align on so that they have a decision-making framework with them. So you know, instead of people evaluating the proposal from, you know, a completely different lens, they can use those principles to evaluate it. That's one. And I think the other piece I definitely try to do is I try to deeply understand where the, you know, stakeholder feedback is coming from, what's driving it. And a lot of the times it turns out that, you know, maybe they're just looking for more data. And if, you know, they're not truly opposed to the proposal or anything, they just want more details, right? So I think I do try to, you know, sort of look at the individual feedback or concern. And, you know, is that feasible to meet or not? And then, you know, try to get them in. And lastly, and this is, you know, this could be an effective tool to get things moving if it comes to that, is, you know, if there's a stalemate and, you know, folks cannot agree on something, then definitely, you know, escalating and giving a recommended option to leaders and saying, hey, let's break the tie.
Yeah. You know, that dives into my next question, which is, you know, you've led multi-geographical teams. What has enabled you to work with teams in different time zone, you know, and essentially geographies to achieve product goals?
Right. Yeah, I think definitely I've been part of several multicultural, multi-region teams. And, you know, apart from sort of time zone overlap kind of coordination challenges, I think those are ones to be solved anyhow. But as a product manager, I feel putting things on paper really helps in getting people on the same page. Like, you know,
yeah, for sure. I would imagine it makes sure that, you know, even when someone is not able to, you know, join a meeting and it, you know, for a specific reason, they can quickly, you know, follow up and catch up on what the conversation was about because it was documented. Correct.
Exactly. Right. So I think one of the key things that is challenging with different time zones and in different geographies is giving everybody a voice on the proposal, right? So because what might happen otherwise is, you know, hey, most of the folks who are in the same time zone, they got together, they discussed, and other folks might feel left out. So that to me is the key problem to be solved in a multi-regional setting. And I think having, you know, the plan or the proposal clearly documented and then giving all the stakeholders, you know, whichever geography they are in, a forum to provide feedback on that proposal. It gives a, you know, sort of goes a long way, both from a trust point of view. So, you know, you are able to get buy-in and trust from multiple stakeholders, and also from a point of view of getting the project along if you need their help to get stuff done.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, you know, I want to shift gear to your current role, you know, which is Google, where you're working on Google Assistant. You know, so Google Assistant is a fairly nascent product from Google. And, you know, tell us about your involvement with Google Assistant.
Yeah. So on Google Assistant, I lead the music and video playback, primarily related to YouTube and YouTube Music. So, you know, and this is across multiple device types. So this could be the Google Home mini speaker, or this could be the Google Assistant on your phone, or this could be, you know, the smart display, the Google Hub on your kitchen counter. So across all of these devices, the music and videos area is what I look at.
Yeah, and you know, for some of us who, you know, don't use all of these devices or services, right? Because I mean, we, you know, we're now inundated by multiple assistants. I mean, we have, you know, Apple HomePod, we have, you know, Siri, right? Alexa, Google Assistant. Tell us what's the difference between Google Assistant and Amazon Alexa?
I think a lot of the, in terms of capabilities and features, I think there is a lot of similarity between the two products. So as you said, you know, Alexa had a bit of a head start compared to Assistant. So there are some use cases where, you know, it has a rich feature set. On the Google Assistant front, I think what Google, you know, leverages its strength for is, you know, being countries and languages. So, you know, you'll find that, you know, Google Assistant is available in a lot of different languages. So users that speak that language can use the assistant. And definitely, you know, goes without saying that there's a pretty strong integration with the rest of the Google product suite, like YouTube, Google Photos, Search, and, you know, the ton of Google products that we all use.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember that I watched that announcement of Google Assistant, where part of the demo was, you know, Google Assistant book a barbershop appointment for me. And it was able to do that, you know, in real time. You know, what, you know, how do you, you know, when are you thinking about a product such as that, that has to make decisions in real time, right? How do you interface the product with the end user, such as, well, one, actually, in this case, there are two end users, right? There's the person who's given the command, and then there's the merchant who's got to be able to make their availability available so that, you know, Google Assistant can make that, you know, appointment for me. You know, one question I have here is, What part of that process, and you know, are you involved with? How does that tie into video and music for YouTube, if at all?
Yeah. So that's a team within Assistant, and it was showcased during the Google I/O event as well. So that's a team within the Assistant called Duplex, and focused on making the Assistant more intelligent, essentially, right? So the more human-like intelligence it has, both in terms of, you know, understanding speech, and, you know, we all know speech is extremely nuanced, right? So there are different accents, there are different ways to say things, the same thing. There are, you know, pauses mean something, hmms and ums mean something, right? So that team is focused on making Assistant, you know, more intelligent. And the way the music and the media team works with that is, it helps as a more horizontal solution that improves our understanding of music related queries. So the more, you know, the more improvements we drive on speech understanding, the better we are able to serve music requests. So yeah, that's how the two tie together.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, you know, for our audience listening, right, you know, I think, you know, what's a piece of advice for, you know, the up and coming product managers, or even the well-established ones like yourself? You know, what is your piece of advice for staying innovative during the product development and management process?
Yeah, I think for staying innovative, a lot of the times, you know, and this, we all fall into this prey, you know, some time or the other, but staying focused on the user need or the problem instead of the idea can really help, you know, take a step back. So I think if we are balanced in our approach, you know, sort of being passionate about solving that problem versus being married to a cool idea that I have, that can go a long way in, you know, staying focused on the user need. So I think anyone, you know, like with upcoming, I would definitely, you know, suggest about being extremely crisp on who your users are and what problem you're trying to solve for them, instead of, you know, starting from a cool idea and then trying to find a market for it. I think that can keep you driven until you have solved that problem, and, you know, like, you keep innovating to solve it in a better way.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. Wow, such an amazing gem there for our listeners. And actually, before, you know, we wrap on this episode, I will say, as I was doing research on you prior to us getting on, and I will say, first of all, you know, we're all, you know, diverse individuals on this podcast, and the world is increasingly diverse. And one thing I noticed, you know, doing that research is that, you know, you have a passion for cooking mean Indian food, and I love Indian food. And so, you know, what is that, you know, what is that? And I think this is where we you know, I ask you about the fun aspect of Indian food for you. But what is that one dish that actually loves to make?
Oh, yeah, I think I do enjoy cooking. I don't know if it goes well or not when it comes out, but I definitely enjoy it. And I really like Shahi Paneer. So, you know, it's cottage cheese in a tomato gravy, and it's one of the, you know, favorites for me.
That's amazing. Excellent. Akshay, thanks so much for taking the time to join me on this podcast. I'm very excited because it's the first one, and I feel like you've shared such an amazing gem with our audience, and I can't wait to see what's next for you at Google in your new role. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Serge. This was great. Thanks for chatting.
For sure.